Well, welcome everyone, and thank you for coming to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I'm Ruth Shapiro, and your moderator for today's program. We are recording this, so we'd like to welcome also our listening audience, wherever and whoever they are. We also invite you to visit us online at www.commonwealthclub.org to see all the upcoming programs that Celia just mentioned and many more. And now it is my pleasure to introduce our distinguished speaker, Sweta Nouri. Sweta has served as country director for Women International in Afghanistan since 2002. She directs programs that have helped more than 33,000 women by providing direct financial assistance, rights education, vocational skills training, and microcredit loans. In October 2005, she addressed the United Nations Security Council and the U.S. Congress about the challenges Afghan women continue to face. Under Sweta's leadership, Women for Women International partnered with the Afghan Ministry of Women's Affairs to register 2,000 women to vote in the historic 2004 presidential elections and 1,800 women in the 2005 parliamentary elections. Prior to joining Women for Women International, Sweta served as assistant for the chair of the Loyal Durga Commission, informing the interim administration of Afghanistan. This program is going to be structured as follows. I'm going to go ahead and talk with Sweta about a number of issues. Meantime, Celia will be collecting your question cards, and after about a half hour, I'll start introducing your questions into the talk that Sweta and I are having. So I think I can multitask appropriately and be in conversation with Sweta at the same time as reading your card, so don't hold back. We look forward to your questions. Sweta, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you very much.
I'd like to start off today with just hearing your personal story, how you all the important events that got you into that chair today.
It's a very interesting question. I think it's afternoon. Good afternoon, everyone. and thank you so much for your participation and giving me that chance to provide you with the information about my life and about our women in Afghanistan. So you ask about my personal life. I grew up in a very high-educated family. My father is retired general, and my mother is professor, and she is gynecologist. So in 1992, I was medical university student, and unfortunately, when Mujahideen entered to Afghanistan, the war started. And then I evacuated Afghanistan. I, with my parents, evacuated Afghanistan for 4 years in Pakistan. And there I established a school for girls and boys, Afghan boys and girls, and there. And then after I got married in 1996, my parents left Afghanistan for Germany, but my husband and I decided to go back to Afghanistan. That time was the Taliban time. Mm. And actually, there was a hope for all the people in Afghanistan that now the Mujahideen gone and all chaos just removed from the government, and now we have a good government. But when we returned to Afghanistan, we saw a completely different picture of whole the life for the people and government in Afghanistan. So really, the difficult time just started. And we decided to not evacuate Afghanistan, but instead work for, especially in particular, for the women in Afghanistan. We saw how the Taliban are ignoring women, not only women, but men as well. All the women was just isolated, and they wear the burqa and veil, and they were just sitting in a house, do nothing. So I decided to work with an international organization called International Rescue Committee, and I was the leader of all the women working in that organization within the period of the Taliban time. So then in 2001, I joined Loya Jirga, which is National Assembly for in Afghanistan, and we formed the interim government And then after 6 months, I joined Women for Women International as a program coordinator. And then after a year, I took over leadership of this organization. And from that day until now, I am the country director for this organization. So.
And I wonder if you could, we could start, now that we know who you are and how talented you are, help us to understand right now the state of women particularly, but essentially the kind of the social state right now that people are facing in Afghanistan.
Well, let me start from the time that the fall of the Taliban.
Okay.
Number of development happened after fall of the Taliban in 10 years, in particular for Afghan women. Like, we have constitution that finally recognize women's political participation in their equal rights with the men. And then we have 25% of quota in the parliament, which is very significant. And now we have 28% of the parliament being seated by the women there. It's very impressive. Afghanistan has elected its first governor at the at the central region of Afghanistan. We have jobs. We have schools now. The women do not wear the veil in burqas. They are so much free, and they have the right to go outside of the country and continue their studying and communicate with other women and other people outside of the country and share their ideas and experiences. These are good numbers. We are so hopeful, but it is in Afghanistan that it is in front of UN cameras and all the international community see it. Mm. But yet there is another Afghanistan, which I call hidden Afghanistan, and it's very scary and very worry for the women in there. It's not easy, actually, for the women to run for the offices. It takes much courage to run for the office because they are targeting and they are threatening by warlords and political parties to not run for the office, else your husband or your kids may lose their life. So these kind of threats that they are receiving. Forced marriages, child marriages, is getting severe and severe into my homeland countries. They don't have any rights to say no for the arranged marriages. This is only man that who decided to whom she should or what and what age she should marry. Can you imagine of 9 years old girl getting married with a 60 years old man? How awful life she might have in front of her. So this is happening today in my country. As I weave my life into Afghanistan, I can see the island of peace. There is some voices from women where the strong presence of international troops and U.S. troops are, but just few step away, the women's right are ignoring by national and local government. They don't have any right, and when they go to complain against their families or in-laws' families, they will be jailed. And what happened in the jail? I can tell you, it's awful. Because they face rape and they get pregnant at the result of the rape. And when they go out from the jail, no one is accepting these women. Like, they are not accepting by their family nor by their community. The only way that they choose to finish their lives by pouring petrol on them and fire themselves. Self-immolation. Can you imagine 75 cases of self-immolation only during 6 months in one province. It's very difficult to report to see all the reports because, you know, the women do not feel that they are a safe place for them to complain.
Yes, you must be at a very bad place to decide that that is your only option.
this is the only option that the women are, deciding to finish their life. Just last year, I went to the Red Cross and I met with a 17 years old woman with burned body, and she was 5 months pregnant, and she was suffered such a great violence at the hand of their in-laws' families, and she poured petrol on herself and burned her body, and her condition was so worse. As I talk with her doctor say that maybe 2-3 days she will be alive and then gone. So interestingly, that I never seen any relatives of these patients in this Red Cross hospital, because this is again big shame in our community to visit these burned bodies. It's shame, right, in our community. So
Sweeta, help us to set a little bit of the historical context here. Afghanistan has had such a tumultuous history in the last 50 years anyway. You know, you've had the Taliban, you've had the Soviets, but historically within Afghanistan, you describe currently a bifurcated society where there are women in presumably influential positions doing some good work, and then the undercurrent that doesn't get in front of the cameras quite as much. Historically in Afghanistan, have women been empowered, or what is the traditional role, if you can say that, because there's been so many changes happening to your country?
Well, if I talk about the two Afghanistan, there are some good progress on development and empowering the women in Afghanistan. Right. But here is the question, the concern is that, as I mentioned before, that there is some voices raised by the women, and there is some of the rights experiencing by the women, where right, the strong presence of the troops in international communities are observing these communities. But just few step away, right, it's completely different. The concern is that about the withdrawals of the troops in negotiation with the Taliban, which concern a lot of women.
Right. And we're gonna get to that. But before we get to the withdrawal of the troops, I want a little bit to set historical context. So just so that we can have the context in which all of these changes now are taking place. So if you would, you expressed that your mother was a professor and a doctor. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So before, when you were growing up, before the rise of the Taliban, was that the norm in Afghanistan?
Well, the women before the Mujahideen and before the Soviet time, we had a very good period of time for all women and men during the King time and during the Daud Khan, the first president of Afghanistan. So there was really freedom and there was really democracy in place in Afghanistan. So all the women could go and whatever they want, they could do that. But unfortunately, well, some of them had the right during the Soviet time, but it was different from the rural areas and urban areas. Still, the women in rural area, they had their own voices and they could experience their rights, but it was different in the rural areas because they were, there was powers working, and they were activists, and they got the support from neighborhood countries, which is Pakistan and Iran. So they worked there. So they did not have any rights to experience it, in the rural area. But in urban was, development. But when the Mujahideen entered, everything just was changed, and all the system that we had in place was distracted.
Right. So, one of the reason why I ask is because there's sometimes a sense in this country we're imposing our Western values on a society or on a culture. And what I wanted to hear, which is what you just said, is in fact these elements are part of Afghani history and culture of having a vibrant, diversified, democratic society. And you're not, by allowing that to come back, is in fact coming back and not being imposed upon by the West.
No, we have that experience before, and all the women, all the society, all the people who live in Afghanistan, they are ready to have all of these change, but it takes time.
Right, of course. So now we can get to what you were just about to talk about, which is that the international troops, the American troops, are going to withdraw from Afghanistan. And before you talk about the implications of that, maybe you can just describe why they are withdrawing, the general sentiment of the people about that withdrawal, and then what the ramifications are.
Well, this is U.S. and European countries' decision that why they choose that deadline for withdrawals of the troops. I cannot say anything about that, but an Afghan perspective, I would say that 2014 is early for withdrawals of the troops. We had a very good progress in terms of having our army, significant number if in army, but still we need to train them. We have numbers, but without training. So we need to make sure that after withdrawals of the troop, our army has that capacity to control all over the country, considering of the interfering from very powerful countries, which is Iran and Pakistan. So it's very important to mention. But one thing that I interestingly find that all the people in Europe countries and U.S. Country, all the civilians are talking that the people of Afghanistan or hating the troops, but this is not true. I am coming from that society. I come from the people of Afghanistan, and I heard so many things about the troops, how they were supportive to the people. But some of the concern, like searching of the troops at the middle of the night in the homes, and some casualties that we have, of course, this is a matter. This is this is a concern for people. But one thing to remember that during the war, sweets are not distributing. Of course, that we will have deaths. We will have people that they are losing their lives. So this is war. And but in general, the people really want the troops to, well, we will be okay for the withdrawals of the troops in 2014, but gradually, not immediately. If they withdraw the troops immediately, there will be a big risk for Afghanistan. And the problem will restart, not start, but restart from the time that we started a decade ago. And that will be worse than the problem that we had in 2001. Because this is not only Afghanistan problem. That will be world problem, more severe.
Well, and why do you think that's the case?
Because Afghanistan will shape as a playground for Al-Qaeda and Shia pacts, Shia pacts, and they will using Afghanistan. It is some of the indicators I can say that, first, people in Afghanistan, they are uneducated people. And working with uneducated people is very much easy to, stand them against the government, you know, and against the reality, against the democracy. It's very easy. And our people in Afghanistan at the grassroots level, 80% of our people living at the grassroots level, and they are so much depend on neighborhood countries because they are using the religious matters, you know, like Pakistan and Iran, they are using religious to stand them against the government in democracy.
Right. So, Sweta, there's a lot of different groups in Afghanistan now. We know that the Mujahideen originally kind of rose up to fight back the Soviets who invaded your country. And then the Taliban, the understanding is, and tell me if this is not correct, that they are kind of a homegrown group. They are not Al-Qaeda originally. They came from Afghanistan, grew up in Afghanistan. So what are I suppose, how mixed are people's views in Afghanistan about what they want for their country? There seems, and is that divide just rural-urban? Is it Muslim-other? I mean, it's mostly Muslim. What are the different forces among the Afghani people in terms of describing and shaping the future?
Well, one thing that I know that all the people just fed up from the war, all the people in Afghanistan, they really want peace and place in Afghanistan. No matter how the peace are coming, but they are so much keen to have peace, real peace and democracy in Afghanistan. So this is not only the thing that, it's about Taliban and insurgent group, but if we talk about our people in Afghanistan, they want peace.
Now, when you were discussing earlier, you said the fall of the Taliban, and it struck me that they really haven't fallen completely, right? They've always been, they're not in power as much as they used to be, but they're still around. How strong is the Taliban now in Afghanistan?
Well, one thing to be mentioned that we shouldn't call all the insurgents and other groups that they are so much in power in Afghanistan under the name of the Taliban, because we need to distinguish these groups from each other. Let me explain that. We have three powerful groups in Afghanistan that they are active, okay, and they are getting support from Arabic countries and other Islamic countries. One is headed by Haqqani, who is war criminals, and there is no negotiation need with that person. That person is a part of Al-Qaeda, and this group should be removed. All the suicide bombing and all of these attacks is belong to Haqqani group. Another is Gulbuddin Hekmatyar. He is another powerful party, Islamic party, and he is playing two roles with the government. Once he has its members at the very high level of Afghanistan government, on the other hand, he is fighting with the government. We don't know which policy he is following. Another group is the Taliban. We need to distinguish Taliban into two groups. One is moderate Taliban and another is fundamental Taliban. Fundamental Taliban is a part of Al-Qaeda, and these people are not sitting on the table for the negotiation nor for the communication, nothing. They don't want to talk anything with the government. These, again, should be removed from Afghanistan. I will get back not only from Afghanistan, but Pakistan as well. But the other is the moderate Taliban. They are accepting the constitution, and they are accepting the women's right. But what they want the job security from the government and their own security while they are joining the government. But unfortunately, nothing have been heard back from the government to them, so they are there. They are there and without any hope, and they just continue what they are doing. One of the examples of that moderate Taliban is Mullah Brother. I'm sure that lots of people here heard about his name. He was one of the moderate Taliban, and he was very powerful in Taliban. And he wanted to communicate with the government, but he was killed by Pakistan, because Pakistan is the government who doesn't want to have this conversation with the Taliban. Taliban nest is not in Afghanistan. It's not creating in Afghanistan. It's creating in another country, which is Pakistan, and then send it to Afghanistan. I remember a few years ago, our President Karzai just mentioned that don't find the Taliban in Afghanistan. They are in another country. But after 7 years, now the U.S. and European countries now believe that, yes, the Taliban is another country, not in Afghanistan. So that was a big mistake, where they just mistakenly fight against the Taliban in Afghanistan, but they were creating in another country and send them to Afghanistan.
So the Taliban is not a homegrown Afghani movement?
No. Well, the moderate Taliban is those people that they are uneducated people, and they are following. One thing to be mentioned about the tribal matter, you know that Afghanistan is a very diverse country, and many tribes. From the beginning of U.S. and European countries' activities in Afghanistan, they always ignore Pashtuns. Mm-hmm. And they named Pashtun as a Taliban, and they ignored the major population of Afghanistan. So here, Pashtun was just say that, okay, we are not Taliban. We are not Taliban. Why we are ignoring? But instead, the Tajik and Hazaras and other Uzbeks, they got a lot of support. So now the Pashtun decided when they did not get the support from the U.S. and Europe, and they blamed to be a Talib, then they go to the Pakistan because Pakistan welcomed them, and then they go. But it's again, it's not 100% of Pashtun. We have very powerful Pashtuns that still stand by their feet and not rely on Pakistan. But some of the Taliban that now they are Pashtun, they got support from the Pakistan is just because that always ignored by U.S. and European countries.
So are the majority of Taliban in Afghanistan Pashtuns?
Well, no. And somehow I can say not the majority, but it we have Hazaras, we have Tajiks that they are a part of Taliban. But since the Pashtun are located in southern area of Afghanistan and it's bordering with the Pakistan, so they have the they go to Pakistan, get the support, and come back to Afghanistan. So.
I see. Now let's just talk about President Karzai for a moment. There are going to be presidential elections. He has a reputation in the United States of being somewhat of a mixed bag. There's corruption surrounding him and his family. On the other hand, it's hard to imagine anyone really pulling all of these diverse interests together. Where is he from? What tribe is he?
He's from Kandahar. He's Pashtun.
He's Pashtun. Mm-hmm. And how successful has he been in getting people to talk across tribal and religious differences?
Well, he has done many good things, but at the end, after, you know, 5 years ago, he was like in a lose the people, especially he lose the Pashtun tribals because he again wanted to hit Pashtuns because he got support from other countries. And at the end, he now... now he knows that what a big mistake he did in ignoring all Pashtuns but rely on Tajiks and Hazaras and Uzbeks. That will be a big mistake. So now he cannot repair it. But for another period of time, we prefer all Afghans. As I talk with many of the people, they prefer to have another president. So with different views and a policy. To move Afghanistan in a new step.
So maybe you can tell us about the evolution to these presidential elections and set the stage for us so that when we turn on the television or read the paper, we understand with your guidance what we should be looking for and how to interpret what's going on there and how the elections are going to play out.
Well, still there is doubt to having this election in place or no, because we have not only presidential election, but at the same time we have the withdrawals of the troops, and Mr. Karzai is pushing to not having that election, but sometime he is mentioning that, the election will be in place in 2 years, but he is not sure.
Right.
About it.
It seems like those are two big changes to be happening at the same
time. And the third thing is the negotiation with the Taliban. It's another big matter. So I don't think We are hopeful, but I don't think that this election will take place. If it takes place, that will be a great for all Afghans.
And are there you when you talk about these three groups, you're essentially, at least the first two, are run by someone that you might describe as a warlord. I mean, I don't know if that's fair, but a very strong personality that's running the first two that you describe. The Taliban seems more diverse. Are there good, educated, I suppose, democratic voices also in the country, or are the big political figures more in the in the warlord or the warring camps?
Well, we do have very democratic parties as well, that right. They are so much active in Afghanistan. But one thing that, you know, that unfortunately Afghanistan is corrupted. it's true. For campaigning, for the presidential election and to have their own voices always up, they need money. But unfortunately, they don't know how to get the support from other countries because it's just based on the relation in the country to get the fund and support financially and mentally as well. So they are on the ground, and we are the people, the majority of people are, they are really watching these groups for the future of Afghanistan.
Right. So it might be, President Karzai might be right that it's premature to have elections only because the people who would be best able to take over the leadership haven't quite gotten to that level yet. Is that fair to say?
No, actually, the leadership of Afghanistan must to be changed. We need actually change within the government. Uh-huh. If Mr. President Karzai remain in that power, I don't think that Afghanistan will be able to move forward because it's a lot of chaos on the government.
Right,
so
he doesn't manage it well, and it's corrupt.
Right? Exactly.
But there are people now, right now, who would be you feel are able to step into.
We have so many people, very powerful, like knowledgeable people that they can take the leadership of Afghanistan. Like we have Hanif Atmar, who is heading the one of the political party called Hope and Justice,
mm-hmm.
And another is
sounds good.
He's very professional. He is very professional and knowledgeable, and he raised from the community, from Afghanistan, and everyone know him. Uh-huh. He was the former minister of Interior Ministry, uh-huh. And he's really good, and the people likes him so much. And Mr. Jalali also is one of the candidates for the presidential election, uh-huh. And he is really good again. I think he is the... his professor in Washington University, mm-hmm. I believe. And he was also the former minister of defense ministry. And we have other folks. And we have one female candidate, a presidential candidate. Mm-hmm. She is Fawzia Koofi. But Afghanistan is not in that situation to have, to elect their female president.
Well, so far, neither has been the United States, right? We can hope for both. what would you? If President Obama were sitting here or Hillary Clinton, and you could give your advice about the United States' role, please tell us what your advice would be for us to be doing in Afghanistan.
First of all, I would urge Mr. Obama and Hillary Clinton to withdraw the troops in 2014, but gradually. That should take place in 5 to 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I'm emphasizing that If the troops withdrawal happen immediately, there will be a big risk, not only for Afghanistan, but for all world. This is one thing that I will emphasize. On the other hand, I will emphasize to make sure that the international aids reaching women, because women are the half of the population. We cannot ignore women's status in a country. As long as we leave women behind, we will have Afghanistan weak forever.
Okay. I was doing what I said I wasn't going to do, and that's read these question cards. So, but let me go on. The United States has been both trying to maintain peace. At the same time, it's doing what we are calling nation building. So it's working with schools and with women's groups and doing on the ground nation building as well as peacekeeping. And we've been fighting too. Is it possible for a foreign army to do all of those things in Afghanistan?
Well, we have that experience through the decades that there's a lot of invest on on the jobs, on the schools, clinics, and these kind of things. But one thing that it's important to be mentioned, that there is no coordination between these aids and the government. For example, PRT is a team that they are working some social activities and they are doing construction in Afghanistan, but there is no coordination between PRTs and our ministries. For example,
what's PRT?
PRT is this is a group that it's a part of army activities, but they are doing social activities
from the American side,
from American and European sides.
Okay,
so they called it PRT. And then the PRTs spend like hundreds of thousands of dollars and build a very beautiful clinic. Mm-hmm. In a community, and then after they build it, they go to Ministry of Health and ask for sending the personnel, and then they heard from the ministry that they do not have any plan to have clinic in that area. So there's only empty building, not helping anything, not people, not the government, not just there was a building. And I don't know for what reason they are using it, because the ministry say that we cannot send any personnel there. There was no plan. So if there is a coordination, good coordination between armies and the government, I think everything will be go good.
So can you help us to understand what it is that our, what the PRTs, I suppose, what is it that our government is doing to help women specifically in Afghanistan now?
I can say that millions of dollars went to Afghanistan to support women, which is good, which is great, and right. We appreciate that support from U.S. government, in particular for the women. But the matter is that these aids disappear when it reach to Afghanistan, unfortunately, and it doesn't reach women. Last year, there was U.S. Afghan Women Council, mm-hmm. headed by Ms. Bush. I was participating in that conference, and there was two ladies came from Afghanistan. One of that women head the local organization, women local organization, and there was the same question that, do you have any access to donors in Afghanistan to get the support for your organization? And she said that, really, there is a donor in Afghanistan to support us? So you see, the money doesn't go to women. This is the matter. This is the concern. This is the problem.
Right.
So that's why we are urging.
What's the solution to that problem?
Well, international communities giving the government or giving the agencies, to implement the project, but they never monitor and observe where and how the money is spent. So this is the problem. If they have observation, if they have the monitoring and evaluation, where the money gone, I'm sure that will reach to the woman directly.
All right, so let's talk about your organization, Women for Women International. Tell us about what it is that you do on the ground in Afghanistan.
Right. Well, Women for Women International started its work in Afghanistan since 2001. And I remember the time that I started just with five staff, and now we have more than 95 staff, regular
wow.
staff. So we grow a lot in 10 years. And we graduate like over 3,000 women in our program. The core program is sponsorship, which matches Afghan women, socially excluded women, with her sponsor based in the U.S. and Europe. And her sponsor, what we call her sister, and this is sisterhood, is providing both emotional support and financial support to our women. And then the very important part of that program is that the letters are exchanging between both sides. So the women who are at that level, at the very grassroots level, they are just feeling that they are so much isolated and they are so much alone and no one is thinking about them. But when they got the letters from their sisters, they come to cry and say that, oh, my God, it's real. I have a sister outside of the country, and I'm not alone. Someone else is thinking about me. So this is the important part of our program. But at the same time, we are encouraging them to have the job opportunity for them, and they are going through our right awareness training and vocational skill training, business management skill, numeracy training. This is 1 year program, and after they graduate, we are referring them to microfinance to invest on their learned skill, and then or referring to other companies that they want to hire female as employee. We have partnership with Sophie Apparel, which is U.S.-based company, and they are producing the U.S. Afghan Army uniform, and all employees are our women. So they have 200 women employees. And then we... late 2010, we partnering with Kate Spade, and their vision for 3 years is to have 3,500 women as a regular employee. So this is a big change to see women empower economically, because it's very important to not only focusing on their rights, but the way how to... help women to approach to these rights. It's only economy. The women have some voices within their family who are empowered economically, but those that they do not have access to the cash, they don't have any voices at all.
So you mentioned a urban-rural divide. Is Women for Women working in both urban and rural areas?
In some of provinces, we start working with urban first and then focus more on rural areas, because we believe that if we bring the change from the very grassroots level, that will help the entire community to move forward. So our focus is on grassroots level, and grassroots level in Afghanistan, they are living in rural areas.
So there's a number of people in our audience who say that Afghanistan is a fairly chauvinistic place, that women haven't historically been equal. So is the work of your organization embraced for the most part, or is there a lot of pushback in both the rural and the urban areas from primarily men who are running most things?
One thing to be mentioned is that why historically our women always it's behind men. Mm-hmm. It's not only about the religious, but it's about the culture and custom that it transformed from generation to generation, you know, and the men are not educated. But once we educate men, I'm sure that we have that experience through having our men's leadership program in Afghanistan, that they are so much welcoming these kind of trainings to have them education about women's rights. So they are so much open. And that can be changed. But still, it needs patience and time.
So You heard earlier my husband sitting in the audience. So I just want to say, what's entailed in men's training? What do you do to train men to? Of course, he already knows, but I'm just asking for.
Well, we are training men on women's rights. But this is not something, it's a bit funny, but it's true. We are not telling the man to come and get training from women organization, mm-hmm. because when you ask men in Afghanistan to get training from women, they say that, okay, we already trained, yeah. we don't need you to train us. But the way that we are asking them to come and participate in our meetings, and that might be good for us to learn more about women's rights through within Islamic context. And they are so much willing to come and join, and then they start conversation. But at the same time, we are training them. And after 2 weeks and 3 weeks and a month or 2 months, when they graduate, they know that that wasn't like advice, getting advices from them, but it was kind of training them. And they were so much welcoming all of these things, and they promised us. Well, actually, we are inviting mullahs and imams to our programs because they are so much powerful people within their communities. And they promise, after they graduate from our program, they promise that they will express all the ideas and all the all about women's rights through the mosques during Friday's pray, which is very large gathering of all community in the mosque, and they are listening for the imams and mullahs' advices. So, and it works, and that work, and we heard a lot from the mullahs and imams that how the people in the community are willing to listen. One thing is, in Afghanistan, it's very common that all the people respect whatever mullahs and imams says. They are not listening to professors, but they are listening to the mullahs and imams. Believe me that people in Afghanistan, in rural areas, they believe if mullahs say that the milk color is black, everyone's saying, yes, you are right. The milk color is black. So this much they are trusting mullahs and imams. So we are targeting mullahs and imams, send them to the community and advises them. And it works.
Let me just tell our listening audience that you're listening to the Commonwealth Club of California, and we are in conversation with Sweta Nori, the Afghan director of Women for Women International. That sounds very encouraging, but you also talked about so many women resorting to self-immolation, and there are childhood brides, and there are honor killings. There are more, you know, you hear about it quite a bit. How do you turn the tide on ingrained cultural mores that keep the women oppressed like that? Is it just working with the mullahs and the imams? But maybe you can describe the different approaches that Women for Women uses.
Well, it's not only about mullahs and imams, but as I say, that why all happening today with women in Afghanistan, because they are not economically empowered. So the main thing to empower women economically, this way we can help women to move up from all these crises and have their own life and experience their rights.
So how is it for a woman in a household living with her husband, her children, and her husband's family to go get a job?
This is not something that we are telling the woman, you need to go outside of the your house, but you can do something within your house.
I see.
And send the products to your husband to the market and sell them, and you can share your money. This is not something we ask them to go outside of the houses.
Okay. So it's the original cottage industry.
Yes.
Yes. So they can be making things inside their
Absolutely.
Home.
Absolutely.
And you train them at women-only trainings to go back and work from their home.
Exactly. Like we have agri-based activities and animal husbandry trainings for our women that we are providing those that they are having a small backyard in their houses. It's in traditional, but still they are so poor. We are helping them to cultivate some vegetables in their backyard so they can use that for their houses and also sell some of it to the market as well and make some money. And for poultry, for animal husbandry, we have poultry, we have beekeeping. All of these working, the women can do it inside their houses, or they very close to the yard. It's very close to their houses, so it doesn't really need them to go far away and do some of the business. They can start. They can work from their houses.
Okay, Sweta, I want to just change course a little bit and get back to a little bit of the bigger picture. Can you describe the relationship between Afghanistan and Pakistan?
Well, everyone is laughing, and I'm sure that everyone know what is the relations.
Does everyone know? I think we want to hear from you.
Well, politically, Pakistan are always emphasizing that they are a very good friend of Afghanistan during Mujahideen time, and they support the Mujahideen during the war, which is right. But of course, that now it gets it's a lot of things moving with Pakistan, especially in particular for because of the Taliban, because always Pakistan blame Afghanistan that Osama bin Laden is in Afghanistan, but finally they discover him in Pakistan. So the relation now, it's not so good. And on the other hand, Pakistan, not only Pakistan, but Iran as well, for being empowered country, they never wanna see Afghanistan as empowered country, and they wanna have access to every single system that it is in place in Afghanistan. They wanted to interfere in all of our systems. Actually, I can say that they wanted to dominate Afghanistan for a long period of time and do whatever they wanna do.
But when you were mentioning all the different tribes, you know, the Pashtuns and the Hazarians, all of those tribes are also in Pakistan.
No.
No?
Hazaras is in part of west of Afghanistan, and then Pashtun is in southern and eastern of Afghanistan.
And they are in Pakistan.
They are bordering with Pakistan.
Right.
But Hazaras is bordering with, they are located in west of Afghanistan,
right.
And they are getting a lot of support from Iran. Because Iran, of course, Pakistan as well, they want to have a Shia pact in that region. And they are fighting because of this matter with Afghanistan. I'm sure that everyone know how critical situation now Iran has.
Right.
With all of these things, but now Iran wanna have Afghanistan, you know, as a playground for fighting with the U.S. and European countries, and it's very true. And Iran government really disappointing, not only Iran but Pakistan as well, that they are disappointing about the long-term agreement that we signed with the U.S. Government. So it's like a red light for them that. They will no longer be in Afghanistan, and they are not empowered as they were before.
Well, there's no question that you're in a tough neighborhood.
Right? Of course.
Yeah. So with very porous borders. So even if the Afghan military is very strong, there's always this back and forth among, you know,
yes.
Along the borders. And can you imagine a time when that is not happening? Or what is it that the Afghans need to do in order to essentially thrive within a tough neighborhood?
Well, one thing I want to say that the border that we call Duran Line, this is not border between Afghanistan and Pakistan. There was something signed during Abdurrahman Khan King, like 10 decades back. And it was not mentioned that this border between Afghanistan and Pakistan. And one of the reasons that Pakistan always want to have Afghanistan weak is that borderline, during line, because now Afghans are fighting to not having that line as a border, but until Islamabad, not until Islamabad, but attack, it called attack bridge, it is belong to Afghanistan. So that's why this is another reason that Pakistan doesn't want to have Afghanistan, as a powerful government. They know that the time is up, and now they will argue about that. It needs lots of, long discussion about that line, but this is very true.
So would you say that in both cases, Iran and Pakistan, that they are the ones who are the provocateurs and Afghanistan is essentially reacting, or does Afghanistan also provoke its neighbors?
Well, always, historically, Afghanistan never had any problem with the neighbors, but it was like vice versa. Always attack was from the neighborhood countries. Afghanistan always want to have a peaceful country, but unfortunately, the neighborhood countries never allow them to have.
Yeah. Well, we can hope for the future on that.
We are so hopeful.
Mm-hmm. There's several questions about, I think that CNN had a program, Beneath the Veil, and you recall the Time magazine story with the woman who was the victim of an honor attack. So there are several questions that want to know when Western press put up these stories about women who are facing extremely difficult circumstances, and one, what happens to the women as a result of that, and two, is it good for Western press to be highlighting those type of stories, in your opinion?
One thing that it's good, actually, that for the Western medias to raise that up, but it's not only happening in Afghanistan alone. It's happening in many, many different countries. But what I would like and urge the media to raise the basic problems in Afghanistan and raise the issue how we can empower women. The domestic violence, when we empower women economically, these domestic violence will end up. I would urge the medias to focus on these main issues, not the things it's just emotionally raised and just having one case and then... Well, this is my personal opinion, but I would urge them to focus more on basic things.
Sweta, we're at to our last question, and I just wanted to ask you, you go around and talk about Afghanistan all the time. There's a lot of misconceptions and lack of understanding about the complexities of your country. So what is it that you want people to really, the people here today and the people who listen to you through this program, what is it, what's your last message that you really want to leave us with?
For the diversity of the country, I want to say that these matter just raised after Mujahideen entered to Afghanistan. I remember the time that I was studying in my school, and there was statistics group coming to get the statistics, and they say that raise who are Pashtun, and I remember that I raised my hand. And then the next day, this group come back and say raise for those that they are Tajik, and I raise my hand. It's very true, because never ever we had that discussion in our family, nor within our community, who is Pashtun, who is Tajik. All we were Afghan. It was very unique and important to us. And then the next day, we had that discussion with my brother, and my brother say, to whom you raise your hand? And I say, for Pashtun and Tajik. And he say that, no, we are Pashtun. I say, no, we are both of them. And he said, no. And we start that discussion. My father come and say that, It's not important for you to know that who is Pashtun, who is Tajik. It's important for you to know you are Afghan, and that's all. And then he stopped. But unfortunately, today in Afghanistan, after Mujahideen time, the first introduction is not like, what's your name, what's your family's name, or this kind of thing. Where are you from? This is the first introduction between two Afghans. Where are you from? Pashtun, Tajik, or Uzbek? So this is really make me very upset, you know, when Afghans between and among themselves are talking this kind of introduction for the first time that they are talking. One thing that I will leave you with is that please don't think that Afghans hate the troops and U.S. and Europeans. They are so much supportive. They like and they love you to be stay with them, because this is the only way that Afghans think that they are protected and they are not alone. There are other countries that see them as a human. They are not considering them as a fighters and combaters. They are humans. They need peace. And they want peace. And that won't be available for Afghanistan in this circumstances with the support of U.S. and European troops. And they are so much keen to learn and be educated.
Our thanks to our distinguished speaker, Ms. Sweta Nori, for sharing her insights and experiences with us. It is truly an inspiration to hear from you. You are a brave and amazing woman, and I thank you very much for coming.
Thank you so much. Yeah.